Welcome back to another episode of The Coolidge Connection. I'm Joanna McCool. This series explores the legacy of Calvin Coolidge by opening discussions with people who knew him or his family. In today's episode, I speak with Mr. Jim Cook, a man who knows Coolidge in a very unique way after performing as Coolidge for more than 30 years. A native Vermonter, Mr. Cook grew up on a small farm, just like Calvin Coolidge, but his interest in our 30th president wasn't sparked until he was cast as Coolidge in the play The Calvin Coolidge Follies. Listen to our discussion as Jim Cook recalls his acquaintance with John Coolidge, describes his process for faithfully representing President Coolidge, and shares his thoughts on the kind of man Calvin Coolidge was.
Just to begin, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your background?
Okay. Well, like Calvin Coolidge, I was born in Vermont. I grew up mainly on my grandparents' farm in a tiny village between Bradford and Barrie called Waits River. I had an older brother. My mother was divorced when I was 3, so I hardly knew my father at all. Right now, I'm living in Quincy, Massachusetts.
Did you ever meet John or Florence Coolidge?
I met them both. John was very, very generous with his time. And so I met with him a couple of times. And we had a couple of late night phone conversations. I didn't know Florence all that well. But I did get to share quite a bit of time with John Coolidge.
How would you describe him?
He was born in Massachusetts, but he had very many of the traditional New England, Vermont, Yankee characteristics. Slow to speak, not assuming much of anything. And that's what comes to mind immediately.
Did he ever give you pointers and help you in your portrayal of Calvin Coolidge?
He never gave me anything of that nature. He was very willing to respond to any questions that I might have. But it seemed to me that his approach was just kind of, here's this man who wants to do this thing. He wants to do it with my father. I'll help him as I can. But he hardly ever volunteered anything.
Can I ask what kind of questions you asked him?
I knew that John and his brother Calvin were both musical. And Calvin Coolidge, the President Coolidge, was not musical at all. And I know that John took violin lessons, and I asked him if his father ever had any requests. And he said that his father might like to hear an old tune like Turkey in the Straw or some of the old square dance tunes. I always regretted that I didn't have greater skill at interviewing. It seems like there are so many things I might have asked him, but I can't say that I did. There's a funny photo that you may have seen of Calvin, President Coolidge, and his son Calvin working on a soapbox derby racer, a kind of car. John always kind of produced the information, you know, it was my mother and I who built it. My father, my brother had nothing to do with it. But when the photographers came by the house, they wanted a picture and they got one. I did just want to insert the fact that Calvin Coolidge, as president, would not have a telephone on his desk. He didn't think that was a fit thing for the president to have. I don't know what he would make of tweeting today. I can't imagine any book saying, and then Calvin Coolidge tweeted, and that's just expletive deleted, ridiculous.
Can you tell me any other stories that are probably lesser known about Calvin Coolidge?
There is so much that has been written, and I have read so much, it almost seems that all of the stories are out there. I can't say that there's anything that I learned from John Coolidge that I hadn't already known. But it was sometimes so interesting to hear him talk about meeting Colonel Lindbergh and Will Rogers and other figures of the day.
Did he ever talk about his time in the White House and how he felt about it?
Never volunteered information. He didn't spend that much time at the White House. He, of course, was attending Mercersburg Academy, which was 70 miles removed from Washington. So, they, of course, he was away at Amherst College. That was a distance, not so far from Northampton, but a considerable distance from Washington. And I remember there was one occasion when Calvin was very dissatisfied with the grades that his son had received, and he didn't want him to come home for Christmas because of that, or come to Washington, and he didn't. So it really seems to me that Calvin was very critical. John was much closer to his mother, Grace. Calvin Jr. was close to his mother as well.
Did you ever ask John about his relationship with Grace? And did he ever tell any stories about that?
I don't know if I ever asked specifically about his connection to his mother. I mean, that information came out, but certainly I was never questioning him on that. That would have been a good question to ask him, but I didn't do it.
So he didn't ever talk about his mom?
Oh, sure. In the finishing conversation, as we spoke about this or that, for instance, Calvin Jr. and John Coolidge were musical. So was Mrs. Coolidge. And she played the piano. She had a wonderful singing voice.
How did you first become interested in Calvin Coolidge?
How did I first become interested in Calvin Coolidge? Initially, I was not all that interested. When I began work on Calvin Coolidge, which was 1970-something, I knew nothing about him. I maybe knew that he was born in Vermont and probably knew that his nickname was Silent Cal. That's all I knew. I knew nothing more.
How did you hear about him and what sparked your interest?
I was cast in a play originally called The Calvin Coolidge Follies, and it was being performed by a small theater group outside Harvard Square in Cambridge, and the rehearsal was just dogged by problems, and it seemed like there was a great deal at work trying to keep this play from performing. But we hung in there, and it did open. There was a newspaper that gave me a best performance of the year listing, and at the same time, they listed The Calvin Coolidge Follies as one of the worst plays of the year. So that was a mixed blessing, I guess.
How many years did you portray Calvin Coolidge?
30 years. When I started out, I was portraying this old man who once was president. And then after a while, I got as old as he was, and then I got older than him. Then I started portraying this young man who was president. But 30 years was a long time to be doing anything. And it just seemed, I suppose, taking my hint from Coolidge, who, in speaking of why he did not seek another term, he said, you know, it's good to get out while they still want you. And he did leave office, perhaps the most regarded president that we've ever had.
Is there anything that stands out to you about Calvin Coolidge that you respect about him?
Certainly his honesty. It almost seems to me that he never did anything because it was politically expedient. He would always do what he thought was the right thing. And so often it was. And there's one quotation which is very central to my thoughts about Coolidge, where he says, if you see 10 troubles coming down the road for you, wait. Good chance that 9 of them will go off in the ditch and you'll only have to deal with the one of them. And like if we were to contrast him with President Teddy Roosevelt, it all seems that he was always looking for some place where he could insert himself or his opinion. Coolidge, not so much. People sometimes talk about Coolidge's luck, how, I don't know, he was city committeeman, I think, in Northampton. Then he rose to the position of mayor. And then he came to Boston as a member of the legislature. And then after a time, he became vice president. And then Harding died and Coolidge is president. Scholars, historians would often write about the Coolidge luck. Well, there are many other political figures who passed through the same offices that he did, but they never seemed very lucky about it. He makes the point in the autobiography that he is ready. When it's time to do something, he's ready to do it.
And I just remember the story about how he was nominated to vice president and how somebody else was supposed to get that nomination.
When he was president, Hoover is going to be running to replace him. Reporters would ask him, what should they do? What should President Hoover be looking for in his vice president? And Coolidge says something to the effect of, well, I think they did pretty good. They did a pretty good job in 1920, so I think I'll leave it up to them.
When you portray Calvin Coolidge, what were some of the things you would do to like prepare and get into his mind?
In my performance, which was based almost entirely on things that Calvin Coolidge said, that quotations, or things that he wrote, I was very interested in presenting him as he thought he was, rather than having any editorial opinion about what I was presenting and how it would be interpreted. My format for the performance was President Coolidge is at a press conference, and he seems to assume that the audience are reporters, and he is responding to questions that they have submitted. Originally, it was required that they write down their questions. He would read the questions to himself, and if he had an answer, he would give you one, and if he didn't, he would just ignore that question. Coolidge, you may know that he met more frequently with reporters than any other president ever has. He held twice weekly press conferences.
When you were doing your research for the role, did you read through all of his press conferences?
Can't say that I did. I kind of picked and chose from things that seemed to match what I was thinking at the time. So I can't say that I was all that thorough about studying the conferences.
Did you look into a lot of his policy, or was your portrayal more about him as a person?
That's exactly what it was. It was more of a presentation of the character and very little focus on what his policies were. I mentioned to begin with that I grew up on my grandparents' farm. They, of course, were pretty much of Coolidge's generation, or he was president when they were in this country. They came from England. But I've always felt that growing up on a very small and simple farm in Vermont was wonderful preparation for me. When Coolidge would speak of doing this or that, it would be something that I had done or had watched other people doing.
So can you talk more about farm life?
Well, let's see. Of course, I was very young. He was 3 years old when I moved to be with my grandparents, and I guess I was about 9 when I left. So there wasn't a great deal that I could do that was of much of any benefit. A farmer, you use your scythe to mow the hay, and my grandfather would sharpen his scythe on a grindstone. And I was often requested that I turn the wheel for the grindstone, turn the handle. And my grandfather always seemed to say that I did it pretty good and that my older brother just would lose interest in it and would sort of go to sleep. So sharpening his scythe was something I participated in. I guess I would go to the hen house and collect eggs and bring them into the house. That's what comes to mind.
Were those things you think Calvin probably did when he was a child?
I'm sure he did, yes, yes. He's in his autobiography, which I do urge you to read if you haven't. He speaks of how he's very proud of the fact he was trusted to plow with the oxen when I think he was 9 or 10 years old, which is pretty young. And it is quite a challenge to drive a team of two oxen and plow a field with them. And Calvin Gould, as a boy, could do that.
What was your favorite part about portraying Calvin?
What was my favorite part in portraying Coolidge? I suppose illustrating, presenting some of his humor. And there's one thing that I did make up. And most of the time, I'm quoting Coolidge all the time. But on one occasion, I made things up. And President Coolidge at his press conference sometimes observed when he was born that Ulysses Grant was president. That was 1872. And President Coolidge, in my performance, would say, I am like President Grant in many ways. He used to say that there were but two songs that he knew. One of them was Yankee Doodle, and the other wasn't. And if Coolidge said something of that sort, and it was clear that he meant it in a humorous way, and you laughed, he wouldn't look pleased that he had made you laugh. He'd kind of look at, what's the matter with you? Why are you laughing?
So it was a very dry sense of humor. What's the thing you miss most about performing?
I don't know. I can say that Calvin Coolidge inhabits my mind considerably in that often there'll be something that should be done, and I'll often run it by my recollections of Coolidge and what he said or what he did in a similar situation.
Do you have a favorite quote or something that he said that you think about a lot?
There is a quotation which is not much hauled out, I think. It's his autobiography. He's writing about the end of the Great War, the First World War, we call it now. But it was the Great War, and we thought we would never have another one. And he said, or rather he writes in his autobiography, what the end of those 4 years of carnage meant, those who remember it will never forget, and those who do not can never be told.
That's a beautiful quote.
Yeah, yeah. Something that is often recycled now, I think, is I have never been hurt by anything I didn't say. He said it in a number of different ways, but I may be very close to what he actually said with my quotation.
Can you describe him as you portrayed him? You said he was honest, his humor. Is there anything else that you think is just essential to knowing who Calvin Coolidge was?
I suppose there are things. Nothing comes immediately to mind, however.
In your research for the role, did you come across any resources that you would recommend for an audience to read?
I suppose reading his autobiography would be one of the things that I would suggest. Also, looking at his press conferences, there are many, many biographies out on Coolidge. And the one that I regard most highly, I think, is, I think it's called Calvin Coolidge, Vermonter. And it was written by a man named Claude Fees, is the way his name is pronounced, F-U-E-S-S. And you see it on the page and you puzzle over how it should be pronounced, but it was Fees.
Very good. I will have to look into that. Is there anything that you would like to talk about in terms of Coolidge or your time as a performer or knowing John?
There's one thing that I would be interested in conveying. Coolidge is, I can't say that he's enjoying a great period of rediscovery or anything, but when I started on Coolidge back in 1970-something, there were people, when I told people what I was doing, I'm developing a performance on Calvin Coolidge, people would say, why are you doing that? And he's nobody that we want to see again. So I do think that I have changed opinion about Coolidge among many, many people.
He's growing more popular, I think, in terms of scholarship even, uncovering more about him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's all the questions I have for now, unless you have anything else you would like to discuss.
Again, nothing much comes to mind. So nice talking to you.
It was nice talking to you too. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me this afternoon.
You're very welcome to it all.
Thank you for tuning in to the Coolidge Connection. This series is brought to you by the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation, which is dedicated to preserving the memory and legacy of America's 30th president. Through various initiatives such as our Debate League, Scholarship Award, and our new virtual library, we aim to spread timeless Coolidge values across the country. To learn more about the Coolidge Foundation and get involved, please visit us online at coolidgefoundation.org. A very special thank you to Mr. Jim Cook, who shared his time and stories with us. We look forward to sharing another Coolidge Connection with you soon.